The Right to Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and by listeners like you.
How did you start writing poetry?
When I was 15, 16, I was very, very religious. I even wanted to be like a pastor in my church. And then I came to the U.S. for a exchange program, went back to Iraq, kind of had to start to think differently about the world and life, and start doubting the church a lot. There was my brother, who's like the opposite of the church, who was the person who's real with life, who understands life. And he encouraged me to write poetry about my questions and my fears. And I started writing, and it was mediocre writing in the beginning, and then kind of kept reading. And with his recommendations, with what he told me to read, I read for a lot of French poets and Western writers and Arab writers, and start kind of developing with kind of his guidance in a way or another.
Hello, and welcome to The Right Question, a program that features authors from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman, talking with Saif al-Seg, an Iraqi poet who has been living in Great Falls, Montana. Before we talk about your collection of poetry, tell us about you. How did you go from living in Baghdad, Iraq, to Great Falls, Montana?
So I was born actually during the war, like the first Gulf War, the 1991 war. I was actually born during when the war was happening. And so that's fun. But you grow up living under a regime of dictatorship and a regime that the idea of leaving the country is very hard. Like even in the 90s, we had to pay money to leave the country. We had to pay like almost $300-$400 to leave the country. It's like a stamp to leave the country. So the idea of traveling was very kind of absurd to me. I didn't get it. But then after the war, we had these exchange programs that through them I came to the United States and but went back for just, it was summer programs. And then I decided kind of I didn't want to stay in the same place I was born in. Besides, it was dangerous. So I wanted to go to a safer place, also a place where they understand and appreciate surreal art and they let it kind of grow. And I went and studied with a scholarship program in Damascus in Syria for 10 months, studied academic English and politics and history and literature. And this program helped me to get a scholarship. And the scholarship was at the University of Great Falls in Montana. It's a very small private school. And this is how I end up from kind of living in Iraq and living in Montana right now.
It must have been a little bit of a shock.
Montana was, because, when you visit for a month or two, it's not as when you visit, you go all to these nice places, to the nice hotels, the nice restaurants, the nice neighborhoods. But, when you live, you start being a real person. You have friends that are very weird in the sense of art. You have friends that are very normal. You have people that are cowboys, like real, real cowboys that believe in all what they believe in. And you have me, I had some friends who like always wore like a cowboy hat, and it's always funny to me to see the difference between the me, I'm from like the real East and he's from the real West, and we dress differently, but we still talk and share something. So it's all about sharing eventually, I think.
What was the biggest difference between the culture you were born into and the culture you found in Great Falls?
Well, I think the culture, even in the U.S. in general, not only in Great Falls, is I think the freedoms. I think it's more so the social freedoms. Like in the U.S. in general, you have more freedom to express yourself, the way you dress, the way you talk, what kind of things you believe in. That's why there's more diversity in religion and beliefs and spiritual beliefs in the U.S. because there's more, people are accepting of other people to some extent. I mean, not everyone. I mean, there are some racist people in the U.S., but in general. But in Iraq, I think the culture is more strict. It's more conservative. Sometimes I feel being conservative can kill a lot of the art and can kill a lot of the idea of art and especially experimental art. So I didn't like that part about Iraq. That was very conservative. You couldn't do a lot of weird art. You couldn't dress the way you'd want to dress. You couldn't really believe in something very different without getting a lot of criticism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Iraq, I was able to write whatever I want to write. But at the same time, the audience there is very small for surreal art or for interest, or not in, for abstract art. The audience is very, very small. So it's so hard to actually start a career from it, you know. But, you know, in a bigger country, in like a country of over 300 million people, there's more opportunity. There's more people that do the same. Like every art form in the U.S. has its listeners and viewers and readers. So it's, you know, in Iraq, it's hard to find people who understand surrealism or abstract kind of art. But in the U.S., there's a lot of cities where known for their abstract art. And that's, I think that's a very big difference.
Well, I know you spent some time, or at least I can tell from reading your poetry, that you spent some time in New York.
Yeah, a few months, yeah.
What was it like there?
Being born in a big city, like, you know, 9 million, like back then it was like 7-9 million people. And this is what I was used to. Even when I lived in Damascus, it was 4 million, something. It was all in millions. And when I went to New York in the beginning, I felt, oh, this is where I belong. I hated Montana because it was so empty and so just nature, and I didn't like nature. So New York, in the beginning, like the first month, represented like, it's the city that you want to be in. And then after just looking at the routine chaos of everyday life, you look at the same, just full streets filled with faces that are very strange, just very kind of boring way of living. And I mean, it's chaotic, but in a very dull way, very systematic way. So I hated it. And even when I, like, it's 4 a.m. and I'm trying to sleep and, you know, someone is honking. So it's too crazy. So at the end, I kind of didn't like it. And I started liking nature more. So now I really want to end up in, like, eventually living in Montana or somewhere as wild as, you know, the American West. But New York also has great art.
There are lots of venues in a big city where you can read your poetry.
Exactly. And this is the thing with me. Like, I'm graduating from school and I kind of have to go professionally about writing and directing and doing all these stuff. And I really wanted to stay in Montana or, you know, somewhere like somewhere very empty. But it's hard to start it. There's nobody. There's nobody who's funded. There's nobody who, I mean, there's no audience. There's no audience. And so I'm thinking about either L.A. or San Francisco or New York to kind of go and try more professional work. But yeah, you can't start it in Montana. I wish I would have stayed. I would never left, but, you know.
There are lots of people trying to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk about your book. It's titled Iraqi Headaches, a collection of poems from 2013. I think I'd just like to start off by hearing one of them, the one titled American Nightmares.
Sure.
Tell us where you were when you wrote this poem, what stage of your life you were in, and maybe a little bit about where this poem came from.
I think at that time I visited big cities in the U.S., visited like Seattle, New York, Chicago, some parts of the South, like the really, really weird small towns in the South. And when I came here, I was very lucky to get the chance to travel around the country. A lot of them were planes, but a lot of them were in the car too. So I was able to see a lot of scenes from big, huge cities to small, tiny southern towns. And then you mix all that real scenes that I saw with the culture of media and the culture of immigration and the culture of how this country started and how it's doing. And, you know, in every country, there's good things. I mean, in the U.S., there are great, very interesting, beautiful things. But at the same time, there's a lot of chaos and there's a lot of darkness. And I always like to focus on the dark side of reality, let's say.
Why?
That's a good question. I think maybe it's cultural. I get people, because if you notice, my writing is on the dark side or on the sad side.
I did notice.
Yeah, and people ask me why is it dark, and I always I really don't know, but I think living in that community, it's being dark is a very normal thing. Being in Iraq, even our jokes are a little bit sad. We're very, you know, satiric people, but at the same time, we had a lot of struggle that the idea of sadness and dark is always kind of follow you. So maybe that's why. And also the people I've read to when I was start writing, I read for mostly dark, weird people. So this is, I didn't read like happy writers. So.
Okay, American nightmares.
America is pregnant. America is silent. America is filled with sad families. Yes, mommy, I hate myself. America is at the door. Soldiers are knocking, asking politely, can we kill you? America is suicidal when the streets are empty. America is a bottle of alcohol in the lonely playgrounds. America is a bloodstain on cowboys' children's clothes. America cooks meth through gum barrels. America, why don't you love me? America, why are your legs shaking? Do you know how the long bearded men feel at night? Do you know how many teenagers have stopped hoping? America is insane. America doesn't sleep at night. America, why don't you believe in dawn? Your old buildings are falling down. Your beautiful ladies are aging. Your nuclear missiles are getting ugly. America, why don't you love me? America, the sun doesn't rise. America, my father loved the river more than me. America, my toys are broken. America, I'm not brave. America, the dark, dying diners. America, the sounds of bombs. America, the world maps are crying. America, don't hide in a corner. America, don't you put on too much makeup. America, why don't you love me? America, why do you hate yourself?
Where were you when 9/11 happened?
In Baghdad.
You were in Baghdad.
Yeah, actually, I was watching TV. I was like playing. I watched TV and I saw, and people, my mom and dad were like talking about it. It's like, oh, this is going to be a big changer. We didn't even know what Afghanistan was. I didn't even know what Afghanistan was. I mean, I was a kid. And it's not a very popular country in Iraq. Like, no one cares. It's like one of these countries that you don't care. It was like a really weird, small African country that people don't mention. This is how Afghanistan was to Iraqis. We never really thought about it. This culture is very far, even though it's close by geography, but culturally, we're very far from Asia and, you know, South Asia and all these places. And, you know, Afghanistan even Iran a little bit. We're very, I think, different, so.
And did your family leave after President Bush decided to send troops in?
No, we stayed in Baghdad through the war, and then we stayed back there for years after. We left, well, I left in 2010 to come here to school, or 2011. Well, 10 to Damascus, and then after that to the U.S. But my family stayed, and they just left to Turkey like a few months ago. So they were in Iraq the whole time. And I have one sister who still lives in Iraq. And the north is a kind of safer part of Iraq, in the Kurdish region.
Must have been scary to have the American troops coming at you with bombs and guns.
Well, war in general is very... It is scary. I mean, it's war. And it's very weird at the same time. It's interesting. I mean, war... Like, there's a lot of scenery in war, and it affects your life, for sure. It affects the way you think about the world. If it affects the way you look at things. A lot of people tell me that I sound more than my age, or, you know, I seem more. And I'm in my early 20s. But it's the idea you live through so much of things, good things, bad things. You just live, like, you feel like you live three lives with your life, you know. Just by seeing things, especially even with the war, then you know, you start traveling, and then with traveling, there's a lot of, I mean, traveling mess. It's beautiful, but it messes up your mind too in a way. And then so all you leave all that place and you reach a point in your life where you're in a safe place, where you're, you know, in an easygoing place. You can just live like a regular person, and then you realize that you've become older way faster than a lot of people. You feel that you're in your 30s and you're only in your 20s. And I think that is probably one of the big effects that I got from all that war thing. But, you know, I know people who lived through war. Like, you know, I know a friend of mine who was born in 1980, and that's where the Iraqi-Iranian war started, and it lasted for 8 years. So he lived his childhood under war. And then in 1990, we invaded Kuwait. And 91, there's the first Gulf War, and there's economic sanctions. And this guy was a teenager at that point, and he lived through the sanctions without really having a lot of chocolate or like anything that kids really, milk or kids that... what kids need. And then in 1998, Clinton bombed Iraq too. And then in 23, the last war happened. And he lived through all of that. And then after the war, the terrorism, Al-Qaeda, all those people who sneaked into Iraq. And now he's in his 30s. And that was his whole life. Every single year, he was under the idea of war. And to know people like that, that makes you dark. It makes you dark and sarcastic and kind of hopeless. I'm sorry I'm a little bit darker, but it really kind of does makes you a little bit hopeless about life, the idea of life, and if it's worth it or not, basically.
Well, that's a lot of intensity to live with every single day.
Exactly. I mean, I've been injured a little bit in a bomb, you know, in a bombings. You know, you see things that I've seen arms in the street. And then you wonder, why is this guy a little bit dark? Well, maybe the things he saw are a little bit dark. People are affected by things they see and hear and feel. And in a war, you only hear and feel... and see just the idea of death, basically. Because it follows you. Like, you wake up when your family leaves, your idea, there's something, even if it's a tiny bit of an idea, it's there, and it's saying, oh, they might not come back, they might not come back. And if they're, like, 10 minutes late, you freak out. Or their phone is off, and they're 15 minutes late. That's, like, the disaster, because you start calling. But, you know, sometimes I've been out of the country for a long time, so I haven't really felt that intensity in years. And it's also weird, you know. The idea of just being in a very safe place is also really weird. Like, the idea of really being in an unsafe place. And like, Baghdad was reported it was, like, one of the most dangerous cities, like the first one or second one, dangerous cities in the world a few years ago. And then I'm in Great Falls, which is Great Falls. It's a very nice, you know, it's a nice, quiet town. And... the idea of living in both places are very, very surreal, very interesting.
You have to feel off balance no matter where you are.
Exactly. And I think traveling does that to you too, the idea of that you don't belong as much. Like, I don't have national pride. I don't have any pride. I don't have pride in places. I don't have pride in countries. I like to live in places where I'm happier, where I'm relaxed. The idea of, you know, having a home is also very different. I don't get it. I don't understand why do you need to have a home. Maybe it's all a big home, or maybe not. Maybe all of it is not a home, and you just have to go through it. You have to live without a home. Because, you know, I don't know. I've been living in a lot of places the last few years, and I didn't feel that anyone was home. I felt good and bad in both places, and kind of that makes it a little bit different.
You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman, and I'm talking with Saif Al-Saigh about his collection of poetry titled Iraqi Headaches, among other things. If you just tuned in, you can hear what you missed and find dozens of other The Right Question programs at our blog, which is located at mtpr.org/twq. There's also a link to this program on our Facebook and Twitter pages. We'll be right back to talk about Saif's plays, a film he worked on, and find out what he thinks about the people in Montana. Stay tuned. Would you read Under the Sun in both Arabic and English?
Sure, yeah.
Because several of the poems are written in both languages.
Yeah, the last section is translation of a few poems in Arabic and English. Okay, so I'll read it in Arabic first and then I'll jump into the English. تحت الشمس أوشم أطراف أصابعك برائحة الحرب ولا تنتصر أنت الذي سيموتون أولادك بداء التنفس احتج لكي لا يتغير شيء أنت الذي ستسمع كل صلواتك من قبل روتين المدينة انظر إلى لافتات المحال تذكر أن زاوية الشارع كانت أمك الحنون أنت الذي قلبك أبرد من قصص الإنجيل اكتب روايتك الحزينة تكلم عن سخافة مستقبل المملكة وعن أيديولوجية سياسة الثعالب والتناغم البشري أنت الذي ستكون فلسفتك كشخير الله اقرأ الجرائد اليومية احرق غرائب الحياة مع داء التبغ أنت الذي ستنتهي مبتسما تحت الشمس Under the sun Tattoo your fingertips with the smell of war Don't seek triumph You're the one whose children will die with the disease of breathing. Protest, so nothing will change. You're the one whose prayers will be heard by the routine of the city. Gaze at the dark billboards. Remember your beloved mother, the corner of the street. You're the one whose heart is colder than the stories of the Bible. Write your melancholic novel. Talk about the absurdity of the kingdom's future, about the political ideology of foxes in human harmony. You're the one whose philosophy is like the snore of God. Read your daily newspaper. Burn the oddity of life with tobacco's maladies. You're the one who will end smiling under the sun.
Oh, we have the sun. Everything's not dark.
Yeah, exactly. See, it's all happy, all good.
You're also a playwright, and I saw on your blog that a play that you wrote was performed at the University of Oklahoma. How did that happen?
Well, I had a friend of mine who led this student organization there, and they were doing a Middle Eastern festival, and they wanted a short play, 5-10 minutes, about a situation in the Middle East. And at the time, I was very interested in the Syrian conflict because I lived there even when the wars started. I didn't see much. I left as the thing happened, but you know, I really liked Damascus when I lived there. So I wrote it about the Syrian conflict, and they liked it. I sold it to them, and it was produced there for something called the Arabian Night, I think, something like that. But I did some stuff with the University of Great Falls too, in Great Falls at the theater.
And you also created a film.
Yeah, my brother and I, Fadi and I, we always had the idea of making films. We're very interested in film. I really want to do filmmaking eventually because I really find it very interesting, and then you can play a lot with it. So we had this idea, my brother and I, about making fun of directors, and then the whole idea developed to be something very different. And then we did that short, two, three minutes film, called Dyslexic Prayer, and we just put it out independently, but we made it very weird, especially with Tyson Habine, the guy who did the cinematography, and then Johnny and Jocelyn, who acted. It was a very, very cool experience. So it took us a few hours to film. It was very like a one-day project, but we got good feedback from it, so that was good.
It is a little bit strange. It doesn't have a lot of odd graphics or anything in it. It's pretty straightforward as far as a film goes, but your poem that you're reading during the film, every line begins with "I hate."
Yeah. And a lot of the things we said, because I wrote it, I co-wrote it with my brother, and a lot of the things we said, we actually like. Like, I like David Letterman. Like I said, I hate David Letterman. I like David Letterman. He's cool. He's funny. But we kind of just wanted to make fun of the idea that of like love and hate. And to be honest, I really don't know why. I don't think when I write as much, whatever sounds good in my head is good on paper. So when I start writing "I hate," there's a lot of, you know, even one of the lines was "I hate Evel Knievel." And, you know, it's for me, this is funny. It's like a joke. So I laugh when I say that. Some people take it more seriously, and that's fine too. But yeah, every line starts with "I hate," and we put random images of people, you know, of Johnny and Jocelyn doing very, like, you know, she's like 8 years old girl, and she's doing push-ups on a dirt road. And I really was affected with a lot of American and French and German directors, the way they mixed sound and music and picture. And a lot of them were very surreal in the way they do things, a lot of non-linear kind of script, non-linear visual images. So I like the idea of not making sense a little bit, because if you don't make sense, then you're making sense to somebody else who's very different, and that's cool, that's fun. And also just art should make people uncomfortable more than they should make them feel, oh, life is great or life is so sad. Sometimes I really go for that when they leave the theater or they leave the film or they read the book, they will be like, oh, what was that? And they leave very confused. And the idea of confusing people is so much fun. It's really fun to do.
Well, I'm glad to know that you don't really hate ice cream and sunny days.
No, I like sunny. I like ice cream. It's good. I like yogurt better, but I like ice cream.
Well, have you written something new you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I can share something that I haven't shared with anybody. Let me see. Okay, this poem is called Leaps, and it goes like this. The dream is still, but the child is falling and slowly dying of sea cancer. The black man is wearing a red suit. His orange hat is laughing at an opiate youth. The night has passed, and the brilliant brains are sorrowful. The morning is the grinning gallows of happiness. The middle-aged woman is donating blood to revive another shopping mall so we can buy our routines, sexual stimulants. The old man reads today's newspaper only to discover it's also yesterday's news, telling us it's another morning where saints die alone.
There is not a lot of ethnic diversity in Montana, I'm sure you've noticed.
Yeah.
Have you felt welcome?
I think people here are very, very nice. I've been asked some, you know, dumb questions for sure, but, you know, I think I feel like I would ask them if I see another, someone maybe from a different country. What I like about Montana that some states didn't have was, they're very interested, and even if they didn't know, they would say it and they would ask you so they can know. And they're very hospitable, nice people. I mean, I always liked very liberal kind of communities, but and Montana is, I mean, it's kind of a mixed community, but all of them are very welcoming and nice. So I really like that about Montana. It's friendly. It's a friendly place that has not been, you know, it's still kind of intact in a way. There's still some nice values, that old-fashioned values that I personally kind of like.
Saif Al-Saig lives in Great Falls, Montana. You'll find more information about him, his poetry, plays, and films at our blog, mtpr.org/twq. Links are also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Ostein, studio engineer. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.